Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today I'm joined by none other than famous New Orleans bartender Chris Hanna, the man who's mixing up some of the Crescent City's finest drinks over at Arnaud's French 75 Bar. So Chris, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Sure, thanks for calling.
So before we start things off, I'd like to say that I've lived on again, off again in New Orleans for over 10 years. It's my favorite place in the whole world. And being up here in New York right now, I've noticed a lot of people are, well, first of all, it's Mardi Gras season. It's in full effect. And people up here are confused. They think Mardi Gras is one day. So, Chris, can you clarify for people what is Mardi Gras? What's going on?
Well, it officially starts January 6th, day of the Epiphany, and then it goes until whichever day the Fat Tuesday is decided. But really, the last 3 weeks are pretty intense, not just the last day.
It's the best time ever.
It is. What starts the 3 weeks is actually this Saturday. I'm sure you're well aware. It's Cru de Vue.
I know. I'm devastated. I'm not there.
I know. And you should definitely be here. It's an insane party.
Well, one day soon enough. So, all right, first of all, let's talk about French 75 Bar. Talk a little bit about the history there, Arnaud's, and how you first started working there.
Well, I was I came down here and needed a job, and I walked around, and the restaurant was beautiful. It had two beautiful bars, and so I applied, and I realized when I applied that I didn't know anything about New Orleans cocktails. It was pretty amazing, always working with eggs. You know, I'm sure it happens all the time now, but this is 8 years ago, I'm talking almost nine. And it was amazing to learn all these classic drinks other than the Manhattan and the Old Fashioned and the Martini. So I learned a lot of New Orleans cocktails through Bobby Oakes, who worked at the bar for 15 years. So it was amazing to be taught by him in the French 75 Bar.
And for those listeners out there who have not been to French 75 Bar, can you describe the decor? And I've heard that it was a gentleman's only bar up until the late 70s. Is that right?
That's true, yes. Arnaud's daughter ran the restaurant for 30 years, and she was the only lady allowed in. It was a men's only dining room, and they were called grills in the day. It was a men's grill bar, and only the gentlemen were allowed to dine in and have cocktails in the room.
So,
the owners obviously had to change that because that's way out of fashion, even though it lasted until the 70s. But they turned it into a cigar-friendly bar. The bar back is amazing. It's beautiful wood. It's mahogany. They brought that in to the bar to turn it into a nice lounge for guests waiting to have dinner and to have before or after dinner drinks at any other restaurant around the location. And then they changed the ambiance and decor to French safari theme with the monkey lamps and the animal fur design like cheetah and zebra, leopard print on the couches. And the music is also from the 20s to match the era of the French safari theme.
So I want to backtrack even further. How did you get into bartending in the first place, and what was it? What was the moment when you realized, like, this was your calling?
I'm an old soul, and I like stories. And when I found out that cocktails all had these really amazing stories behind them, why they were named, who drank them, when they were invented, you know, it was easier for me to continue bartending because I started in the kitchen, and then I realized some of these ingredients had to be made by hand, you know, like really, really nice syrups and drams. And so it was easy for me to look to the past cocktails and remake them by making the ingredients necessary that weren't being made today. And so it was the stories, the actual craftsmanship of cocktails. You know, I'm pretty culinary anyway, so I've always worked in restaurants. So moving from the kitchen to the bar was the easiest step for me, and I just fell in love with the stories of bartending.
So New Orleans is the first city in America to have a pharmacy. And it's also, you know, seen as the most famous cocktail city where the cocktail was invented. Can you talk about the genesis of it? And, yeah.
That's a very tough question.
It's a very controversial question, absolutely.
Yeah, it's gotten me into a lot of trouble. But, yes, you know, the whole part of everyone believing that, you know, cocktails began by pharmacists offering an alcohol, which was brandy here, and then bitters, which, you know, help your stomach, and then a little citrus with the lemon peel to help you make it through the day. But back when, you know, we didn't have proper hospitals and care that we do now. So people believe that's where the cocktails started from, and it's easy to believe that since we are the first town to have a pharmacy. We even have, you know, obviously we have the amazing pharmacy museum. And we have the oldest American-made bitters. They're actually, Peso bitters are older than Angostura, even though Angostura is obviously more popular throughout the country. But we've had, I mean, I've researched and seen newspapers with bitters recipes on front pages of newspapers in 1803 in New Orleans. So we've been tinkering with the spirits for a long time.
What are some of your favorite classic New Orleans cocktails to make or to drink? Either or.
The Absinthe Swissesse and the Absinthe Frappe are a couple of my favorites. I love, obviously, the Sazerac and the Ramos Gin Fizz. There are, you know, I like morning drinks because, after you live here for a while, you realize that an amazing lunch is better than an amazing dinner. Like, you know, the whole Galatoire's Friday lunch thing. I mean, lunches are intense. They're 5 hours long. And so, like, afternoon cocktails are pretty important, and I have my favorite moments walking the quarter with a milk punch from Marvin Allen or Ramos Gin Fizz or a Absinthe Frappe just walking the quarter.
I can't remember if it was you or Chris McMillan who was telling me the story of Huey P. Long allegedly had his hotel. He would go to the Roosevelt, but somehow he built a path to work so that he could instantly end up at the Roosevelt Bar and drink Ramos Gin Fizz. Is that right? Or something
like that? That is true. And that's very true. It is McMillan, though, and I love all the stories he tells. He's an amazing orator of our cocktail history. And yes, from Baton Rouge, that highway was built directly to come straight to New Orleans from Baton Rouge. Aside from the, I guess, 55, it was a separate road that went all the way down.
That's hardcore. It's also, I kind of love that because that's probably one of my favorite drinks. But what's a specific old-fashioned New Orleans cocktail that you love based off of a story or a history of it? Like, can you tell us the story of the drink and something that people don't typically know about it?
Well, there's a couple. Let's do the Swissesse first. The Swissesse is a delicious breakfast cocktail. It has egg white and cream, just like the Ramos Gin Fizz. It has absinthe and herb saint or a pastis, creme de menthe and orgeat, and the gentleman would make the cocktail and name it after the lovely Swiss ladies that they were to have fallen in love with who visited the French Quarter. So they named the cocktail the Swissesse. Let's see another one. The Raffignac is really, really cool. You know, naming it after the mayor who put the first street lights in the city, so the city could be lit at night, not just by, like, individual houses. So, like, down Canal Street and all the major boulevards had their lights, electric and gas lights, and so they made the Raffignac cocktail.
And it literally gets you lit up, is what you're saying. Yeah. That's why it's called that.
Yeah, and it's actually the first highball, actually, the Raffignac. Brandy, rye, raspberry syrup, and soda.
How early is early to drink a breakfast cocktail?
Well, unfortunately, early for me is 11, to be honest. But I would say, like, if I had a day off that I was really, really happy about, which is Mardi Gras, and we start drinking at 6 at my house because I live on Jackson Avenue and Zulu comes directly from my house. But I would say 8 o'clock is perfect. It's a perfect time for your first Sazerac or Ramos Gin Fizz. Like punch or Swissa.
What do you think is, what would you eat with that for breakfast?
With the Swissa?
Yeah.
I would probably have eggs hussard, you know, from Galatoire's. Artichoke, poached egg, ham on a McMuffin.
This is the thing. Then you have to go take a siesta for like 4 hours because it knocks you out.
I know.
So I like the way you think.
Exactly.
So, you know, you yourself are known for really amazing kind of modifications to old classic cocktails. And one of the things that I've had from your bar that you've made that really kind of blew my mind was your version of milk punch. And what is milk punch and what is your version versus the old school version?
Milk punch is half and half milk, brandy or bourbon, vanilla extract, nutmeg, and a little simple syrup sugar. And the one I think you're referring to is when I went to a taqueria and bought some horchata.
Yes. So good.
And yeah, I made a Mexican milk punch, obviously, with tequila, and that was pretty cool to do.
It was crazy delicious. How did milk punch come about? Because it's kind of I guess it's like White Russians in the sense that maybe because I'm lactose intolerant, it's like the forbidden fruit, but I love it anyway. Like, milk and booze seems like a bad idea, but, you know, how did milk punch historically come about? Like, why were people making this back in the day?
That's really funny about the lactose intolerance, because Walker Percy wrote the book Love in the Ruins. It's about a guy who's lactose intolerant and still loves the Ramos-Gentis. But anyway... The milk punch is actually older than the White Russian, and it's pretty much what makes it a punch is the sweetener, the weak, which is the milk, and then the spice, which is the nutmeg. And so they called that a punch. And you know, milks, you know, imbibed early on, and so they would just spike it with brandy and a little bit of vanilla, and it was a nice way to have your morning glass of nutritious milk.
Because, I mean, how far back that you can think of does this booze go, like, for that cocktail? I mean, who was drinking it back in the day and why?
The milk punch? I think the late 17... I had to be the late 1700s. And, again, everybody, you know, from the whole putting spirits into your body, thought, you know... People thought that it actually benefited you, even though obviously they were getting drunk. I guess they were turning a blind eye to that part. But they, you know, to start the day, milk, you know, a little sugar, you know, instead of just the brandy and sugar, just stretch it out, have a nice drink. And the milk's different now than, you know, if you go to like a real dairy, you know, I guess the fats that were good for you aren't in it anymore, or they actually could be bad for you if it's not processed the way that homogenized milk is. But anyway, that's they still thought it was beneficial and helped the day out. And they didn't really have like three or four. It really was just one for most people anyway.
Got it. Well, so I think, at least in New Orleans has some of the best bartenders, and I'm completely biased in saying that. But one of the things that I love about New Orleans bartenders is your ability to storytell. And beyond that, what is... in your mind, a key element to being a great bartender?
Well, in order to storytell, you have to have a couple facts and then embellish your story. And so reading old books, you know, is a fantastic way, because when you get guests at the bar, they've never had something before. If you can introduce it to them and then talk to them about it, then, you know, it creates their own story. And then they tell their friends and bring their friends in, and they want to know it's something else. You know, I carry like at least 8 cocktail books behind the bar, and I love to like serve a guest a cocktail and then hand them the book so they can read about it. It just enhances their experience. So if you can talk about a cocktail or an experience, or even your friends, and send people on their way to a different bartender for another drink, you know, the camaraderie of us bartenders here is pretty awesome. I love sending people all around town, telling them to say hello to my friends and having their drinks and listening to what they have to say.
We have so much more to talk about. We're going to get into what to drink during Mardi Gras, but stay tuned and keep it locked. I've got more with Chris Hanna from New Orleans. You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'll be right back.
The following program was sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards and Sons. Summertime is not the only time when barbecue is welcome. At S. Wallace Edwards and Sons, Sam Edwards has been working his magic on ribs, briskets, thick-cooked pulled pork, and much, much more. Add a few of their sides and the party is complete. Entertaining has never been so easy. To order, go to virginiatraditions.com. I wanna know
what's carnival. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman. And I'm joined today by New Orleans bartender Chris Hanna. We've been talking about New Orleans booze and Mardi Gras and the history of the cocktail and so much more. And, you know, Chris, what's one of your favorite aspects of Mardi Gras?
I guess it would have to be the outdoor cocktails. You mean drinking-wise or just Mardi Gras in general?
In general, and booze, perhaps.
In general, the parades. Obviously, the parades are awesome, and how you prepare for them is pretty fantastic.
How do you prepare for them?
Well, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, the Coup de Vue is this Saturday, and what I obviously, you know, I wear one of my favorite suits out, and I have a couple of cocktails and flasks, and they're always the same Coup de Vue flask cocktail, and I named it after Dr. John's, called the Rebenac, and then pretty much goes the same for the other parades. I'll make a cocktail, big batch, 5 gallon for muses, and just sit out there and ladle it out. Anytime some friends need to like refill their cups, or just walk back to neutral ground to where the 5 gallon bucket is and ladle it in their cups. And that's the same for the St. Anne parade, which is the last day, which is Mardi Gras. You know, I'll watch half of Zulu and then I'll bike to my restaurant, and I'll build a 5 gallon tiki cocktail and push it in a shopping cart and meet the St. Anne and walk down Royal Street, ladling out to all the other bacchanalians around.
What is the Rebenac, or I'm completely butchering the name, that you set up on Coup de Vue?
That's good. Rebenac. Rebenac is, it is 2 ounces. If you make it, I make it at work as well. 2 ounces of whiskey, 3/4 of Amaro, and 1/4 of Creole Shrub. And 2 dashes of bitters, and, you know, if I have a 6 ounce flask, I double it, and then I just put it in my pocket and just swig it whenever I need a little heat up, even though it's warm right now. Usually, Coup de Vue is the coldest parade, and it's pretty much freezing, but I know up there, you guys don't believe me when I say that.
No, it's true. It is cold, but, you know, it's
an awesome parade.
If you have the right alcohol, it's not that cold.
Exactly. So, and Dr. John was king of Coup de Vue once, and when he threw me a cup, I decided to name my flask cocktail the Rebenac. But what were you going to ask?
Well, no, actually, what is the theme of Coup de Vue this year? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's probably not appropriate for radio, actually. I just realized.
Well, actually, that's true. I know one crew is dressing up as all Chris Owens, and I can't wait to see that.
Oh, my God.
One of the sub-crews, Wayne Curtis, actually, our good friend, one of the authorities on rum, Wayne Curtis, he's in that sub-crew of Coup de Vue, and he said he has to wear a black wig, fishnets, and he obviously has a well-enhanced brassiere area. I don't know how.
So, radio station. So historic. Okay, let me back up. So, for listeners out there who don't know what a crew is, how would you describe it? I mean, crews are different secret societies, sort of.
There's, yeah, secret societies and social clubs, and they, you know, they get together throughout the year. They have, you know, they have a charity they donate to. They pay their dues. They have, you know, they're under guidelines of what how well they have to dress. You know, build their floats. You know, even the muses' shoes are under guidelines of specific grade glitter for when they decorate their shoes this year. It's pretty serious. But that's what they are. They're social clubs.
And there's events, secret society events, and parties, and, you know, I mean, for me, one of the best things about Mardi Gras is just the food, going to people's houses throughout sort of the 3 weeks that it's happening. And what are some of the things that what are people cooking that you love, that you look forward to, like yakimi and gumbo, that kind of thing?
Right. You know, I really love that people are doing the yakimi, but everybody always has to do their own gumbo, which is very cool, especially for, like, Coup de Vue. it's also the timing. See, for me, I'll have some breakfast foods because Zulu, you know, it starts at 8, and I have to start at 6, and so I'll have that and king cake. But I'm going to be meeting my friend Brett Martin, who is also from Brooklyn. He lives on the Coup de Vu line, and I'm sure he's going to have his gumbo, maybe even jambalaya, and another, and obviously king cake. Everybody has to have a king cake there. So those are some of the foods.
How would you describe Yakamine?
Yakamine, wow. I would obviously an Asian dish, boiled egg, nice noodle, meat and fish broth sometimes. Greens. I don't go to many vegetarian. I mean, sorry about that. Korean restaurants know what their soups are called. What would you consider it?
A yakamine.
Probably more of a.
Well, this is the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Yakamine, it's funny. It's a very specific New Orleans dish, but as I'm getting older and older, I'm learning that it's in Baltimore and Chicago, and I'm going to completely get myself in trouble for saying this because I don't know the facts, but allegedly,
no, you're right, though.
It comes from China. When the Chinese came into the U.S., I don't remember how long ago, maybe 100 years ago or so, that they would basically make, well, okay, in New Orleans, I believe it's anything from a broth, almost like a pho, which is definitely not Chinese, but it's that's kind of what it is. But it can be thicker without a broth. You know, I've seen it almost like lo mein style. I don't know, Manchus. I like theirs a lot.
Lo mein is a great example.
Yeah. It's like a weird thing, but a lot of people consider that to be the antidote to a hangover. You know, people swear by it, and especially during Mardi Gras, especially during Zulu, I love Yakamine. It kind of like gets me through.
That is awesome. I don't know why I haven't thought of that. I'm going to do that this year. I'm sure I'll be hungover this year, so that'll be my thing.
So, I'd like to try to see historically, like, let's think about if you can think of any crews in history that have, like, a very signature punch or a cocktail or something that they always drink. Or have you been to a secret society party and they're, like, serving up a specific punch or something like that?
You know, I was really hoping that through my years in bartending in the city that I would be invited to work a secret society party and then I'd be able to find it. But I haven't been asked. I mean, you know, kind of like the Eyes Wide Shut type thing. But because I know it exists, you know, I just wish somebody would approach me. I would keep it hush hush except for your radio show, and it would be a fun time. But as far as I really don't know. It's other than like Bacchus might have. I mean, they're the only ones that might have a specific cocktail. And we do the Bacchanalian, which is obviously wine. There's wine in the cocktail, but I haven't heard of anybody having a specific like drink straight for their crew or their organization.
What's the Bacchanalian? What's the recipe? Can you give it to us?
Yeah, of course. We do 1 ounce and 3/4 of cognac, 3/4 ounce of a claret or Merlot or Cabernet, and 1/2 ounce of lemon juice, and a quarter ounce of agave nectar. Shaken goes into a wine glass over ice, and I also serve it with a king cake, baby, during Mardi Gras.
So, as you know, Mardi Gras is a testament to surviving gluttony, basically. I mean, you know, the Mardi Gras day is the day before Lent. We have to give stuff up. So people go a little crazy. It's excess. It's wild. It's fun. Whether that means you drink a lot or you don't, or you eat a lot of food, you're going to feel kind of gross in the best way possible. So, you know, what are some of the ways that you survive the hours and hours of cocktails and heavy foods? Like, what is a hangover cure that you live by?
Hangover cure. Well, this year I'm going to try the Yakamine, but to be honest with you, the fact that I work a lot of hours is helps me survive. So So I really don't get to see that much. I get to see a lot, but thankfully I'm in. I have to be sober and at work, and that'll take me away from some of the madness. But the only way I think scheduling, you know, helps me the best. I wouldn't say foods necessarily. I mean, you have to. Mardi Gras is long. It's a long 3 weeks, and you have to like figure out within the last 2 weeks, which is more than most of the parties are going on the last 2 weeks. You have to figure out which ones you can do, which ones you can't, because you still have to have a job. But I don't know. I don't know about hangover cures other than the Fernet, you know. But that's gotten a little out of hand lately, I guess, with the bartender scene.
And can you explain what that is?
Fernet, you know, there's bitters. You know, you do bitters and soda. You know, that always helps out. Orange peel in there, but it's a digestive. It helps your body like function. You know, so if you are hungover, maybe people believe it pushes out whatever it is that might give you the sweat, you know, when you're really hungover. And so, like, an ounce of that, you know, when you wake up, should be kind of a ritual for Mardi Gras.
What if you stuck it into some Alka-Seltzer? Would that be a faux pas?
That is fantastic. That's even better than bourbon and Alka-Seltzer, which is what I was doing when I was visiting the distillery. That's a much better idea. I'm gonna try that as well.
Wait, bourbon Alka-Seltzer?
Yeah, you know, we were taken to these distilleries, and bourbon paid for our rooms, and we had free bourbon in the room, and I'd wake up and just dump the bourbon in the glass, put the Alka-Seltzer in, and I just figured that would kind of be a better hair of the dog, but it was not. Fernet and Alka-Seltzer is a fantastic idea. I'm definitely going to try that and get back with you.
It sounds like an explosive concoction. It's like kind of terrifying. I don't know, you know, you've got a ton of your own amazing cocktails that you're doing that are sort of modern New Orleans cocktails. One of them, I think you've called the Bywater cocktail. What is it? What's in it? And where does the inspiration come from?
The inspiration from the Bywater is from Amerpecan, which we can't get anymore, but we can make our own. We can make our replicas of Amerpecan. And the inspiration actually comes from Brooklyn. And the reason why is because the Brooklyn cocktail has Amerpecan, maraschino, whiskey, some bitters, and a little vermouth. And I always considered, you know, back when I made the drink, that the Bywater was the Brooklyn of New Orleans. You know, a lot of people, we love the French Quarter, just like you must love Manhattan, but most people who bartend in Manhattan, I believe, work in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? So it's just like, there is a Manhattan, there's also a Vieux-Carré cocktail, which is the French Quarter. So I wanted to make the Bywater because we love the French Quarter, but I can't afford to live in the French Quarter. And most of the cool and hip, funky people live in the Bywater, which I was considering the Brooklyn of New Orleans. And so there's rum, because we were more of a rum town then. There's the Amer replica that I make, and chartreuse, and some falernum.
It sounds crazy good. And
yeah, it's pretty.
You have to be a hipster to drink it, right?
Exactly. I had, you know, when you talk about the Bywater and you think you can make the Bywater cocktail, you have to make sure the people who live there think it's a nice representation. And I think the funkiness of chartreuse and the Amer and a little falernum go well with the rum.
It's
a touchy neighborhood, you know.
Is it being served anywhere in the Bywater or just at your bar?
Mirepoix Foods is actually going to put it on their menu. We're getting more cocktail bars in the Bywater. Usually, you know, there was just Elizabeth's and then some other, you know, dive bars and fun bars and wine bars like Bacchanal. You know, obviously BJ's and Marquis, but I wouldn't expect either of them to do the Bywater. No offense, just I don't think they're going to be making Falernum or the Amer.
I mean, Marquis bar didn't have women come in until like 1991 in the bar, right? We used to have to sit outside. Whoa. So I love Marquis. I'm just saying. Anyway.
Wow. That's,
yeah. That's some real talk for you, but I love
that
it.
Really,
I'm so happy we're allowed in there now.
Right on. That's where I watched the Super Bowl.
Yeah, there's no other place you
Saints
can.
Super Bowl.
Go right. Saints. Well, Chris Hanna, unfortunately, we've got to wrap things up, but I hope you have an amazing Mardi Gras and catch a golden bagel for me at Croix de Vue this weekend.
Awesome. Yeah, I will.
And thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me today. And thanks to our listeners out there. Thanks to Carlos Salguero, Jack Inslee, the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio Network. I'll see y'all next week.
Let's go out to eat and get some meat. Turkey and jam.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.